Blog Talk Radio.
I was toting my pack along the dusty Winnemucca road when along came a semi with a high-end canvas-covered load. If you're going to Winnemucca, Mac, with me you can ride. And so I climbed into the cab and then I settled down inside. He asked me if I'd seen a road with so much dust and sand, and I said, listen, I've traveled every road in this here land. I've been everywhere, man. I've been everywhere, man. Across the deserts bare, man. I breathe the mountain air, man. Of travel I've had my share, man. I've been everywhere. I've been to Reno, Chicago, Fargo, Minnesota, Buffalo, Toronto, Winslow, Sarasota, Wichita, Tulsa, Ottawa, Oklahoma, Tampa, Panama, Mattawa, La Paloma, Bangor, Baltimore, Salvador, Amarillo, Tocopilla, Barranquilla, and Padilla. I'm a killer. I've been everywhere, man. I've been everywhere, man. Across the desert, bare, man. I breathe the mountain air, man. Travel, I've had my share, man. I've been everywhere. I've been to Boston, Charleston, Dayton, Louisiana, Washington, Houston, Kingston, Texas, County, Monterey, Faraday, Santa Fe, Dollapoos, and Glen.
It's time for the next edition of the Riveting Jumbo Justice Radio Show, broadcast worldwide on Blog Talk Radio. Turn up your speakers and listen closely since you may be asked questions later. Keep your phone handy, since we encourage you to call in your comments to the host and guests on today's show. The listener call-in number is 347-996-5983. Once again, the number is 347-996-5983. You will also find the number on the top of the homepage for the Jumbo Justice Radio Show. I'm Audrey, your technical and spiritual advisor for the radio broadcast. And now, without further delay, allow me to introduce your eminently qualified and inspiring host for Jumbo Justice, Professor Keith Haley.
Well, thank you so much, Audrey, and I've said for 171 previous hours that occasionally you sure do exaggerate, but I enjoy it, and we could not do it without you flawlessly. One more time, I think this is our 172nd hour of broadcasting on the Blog Talk Radio Network. I think we could say this crew is a veteran of the Blog Talk Radio experience, that's for sure. Well, welcome to the Blog Talk Radio Network, ladies and gentlemen, and the Jumbo Justice Radio Show. Tonight's going to be a little bit different. It's going to be sort of a scrambled Justice Radio Show because we're going to demonstrate and show some things that are kind of new with Bing, Bing.com. That's Microsoft's search mechanism device, and it's just fantastic. It's doing some things that I think folks, even if they're not in education production business or something else, they might enjoy this, just doing their news this way, because it's fantastic. More about that later. I'm your host, Keith Haley, and we want to thank Johnny Cash for taking us on that wonderful trip across the country, and we cut him off to be sure that he didn't stop in Nashville tonight, because we're sympathetic folks down there with the Cumberland River, and the water's just out of control, and I think 29 lives have been lost so much in our hearts and prayers. Are already in our hearts and prayers go out to the folks in Nashville. Had this not been, in the context of the terrorist bombing attempt there in New York City and the oil slick down in the South, then we'd probably hear a lot more about this. And I understand that people are really banding together, and churches and help centers and the police and all kinds of resource and social service centers have really done a marvelous job in helping people down there. Emily and Mike, we want to thank you tonight. Boy, you folks are going to be busy getting us through some of these screens. And I don't know, how many browsers are you allowed to? Is there a federal law on that yet? How many browsers you can have open on your computer at the same time? Remember, everybody should be the same. At least some would think that in government service. Well, the purpose of our show is what it always is. We try to take a look, discuss news issues and events and developments in the always difficult and sometimes humorous practice of criminal justice. And we have some humor tonight. We hope you will enjoy that over and above Audrey's joke. She always has a joke. She has a short one tonight, she told me, but it's a funny one. Our show is dedicated to the tireless police courts and corrections and juvenile justice professionals at all levels of government, local, state, and federal, and international services. We don't want to forget that. There are people in the United States that work in international protection type of service. What we try to do is look inside the field of criminal justice and take a close-up look at its practice, or at least do something very closely related to that whole idea. You're listening on Blog Talk Radio, and I never fail, I don't think, to mention that you too, I mentioned somebody today, they couldn't believe it. What do you mean? You can broadcast a radio show for nothing? I said, oh, yes, you can. I says, even President Obama has discovered it. And on Blog Talk Radio, it's a leading-edge technology, and Alan Levy's the CEO out of the telecom business, and he is leading CTO. It's now one of the top 100 websites in the world, according to Webware. They've won one of the awards, and now we have literally thousands of shows. I keep saying 29 or 30,000, and I apologize for not going and counting and finding out more about that, but you can read about Alan Levy yourself on Blog Talk Radio and the Internet, newspapers and all sorts of things. But what's possible, as I mentioned to this person today, that any person, any interest group, can have their own show broadcasting live and streaming audio over the Internet worldwide to an unlimited number of listeners. And you can broadcast every day. In fact, a gentleman's contacted me. I think I'm going to contact him about maybe being a guest on his show, and I think he broadcasts every day. Which, just think about it. Isn't that incredible? Jump back a decade, and you've got a radio station, a show that broadcasts worldwide every day, can be heard on cell phones. I mean, what in the world is going on? Isn't that incredible? The shows are also archived, by the way, and immediately they're ready for either download, and you can keep them, do whatever you want with them, or you can just play them off of the Internet site. So as I'm fond of saying, get your own show. If you don't like this one, there are thousands of others to choose from. Tonight we're going to take a look at some of the news issues, and you're listening probably on your computer, and some people listen on the cell phone, I know. You can call in by phone. If you want to call in during our news segment of the show, you can call in at 347-996-5983. That's 347-996-5983. And what we're able to do, it should have never happened, it has quite a while in the past when we sort of set up the calls. Five people can talk at once on and talk to each other. I can hold five calls on the switchboard. Isn't that amazing? So anyway, Audrey, you have a blog joke for the night. And what's this one about? Oh, okay, you're tipping it off on this one. I love this one. It's a short one, but it comes out of a state I love.
Professor Haley, tonight's blog joke may be the fastest one ever, but it is funny, and I think our listeners will like it. Here it is. Two blondes living in Oklahoma were sitting on a bench talking, and one blonde says to the other, which do you think is farther away, Florida or the moon? The other blonde turns and says, hello, you must be kidding me. Can you see Florida?
All right, can you see Florida? That's a good one. Beautiful state, ladies and gentlemen. If you've never been to Oklahoma, if you've never seen the sunsets, when you look west, you see beauty. In fact, you've got web pages of Oklahoma sunsets on the Internet. If you've never seen some of those, it's something in the air that makes them absolutely spectacular. Well, ladies and gentlemen, on a much more serious note, we try to support the Ohio Gun Coalition, and they have a public service announcement that's directed to the street criminals, both in the state of Ohio and all the way across the United States, all the way across the United States. They want the criminals to go turn in their arms. Now, it's okay if they get a, you know, a gift card or something for turning in their pistol, but we certainly would like them to do that. I assume that's who this message is directed towards. So, Ohio Coalition, let's hear your fine public service message.
Carrying concealed handguns in Ohio? It's a deadly idea. A message from the Ohio Coalition Against Gun Violence.
Well, thank you very much, Ohio Coalition. And we hope that those criminals on the street get the message and turn in their firearms. Crime is down, but we want it to go down even farther. Well, ladies and gentlemen, the interest of planet sustainability and how many ways can we save the planet? I've been working out of a book called 1001 Little Ways to Save the Planet. I pushed this book so much, I ought to be getting part of the royalties probably. But anyway, this book is by Esma Floyd, and the tip tonight from the author is about sponging. Have you ever heard this one? No, I never think of it. There's so many ways we can work on planet sustainability, and I never think of this one. And here's what it says. It says, are you using a real sponge to bathe or in the shower or something like that? I guess people do that. I've never done it, but it says it might be soft and natural looking, but if you buy one, you're actually contributing to stripping of the natural products from the ocean floor. Did you ever think about that? When you buy a real sponge, you're taking the products off of the ocean floor. Most artificial sponges are made from polyurethane, so there you go again. You know what that's doing to the planet. So it's much better to use a cotton washcloth instead. As a matter of fact, you probably don't need, you could use your hands. So it's very complicated in planet sustainability, but it's oh so important. We'll have more to say about that here a little bit later in one of our news segments about a meatless Monday. And, you know, you can't have, you know, if you have a meatless Monday, why not a meatless Tuesday? And, you know, why not meatless all the way? I mean, it could, that could happen. But anyway, let's take a look at some of the news, and it is very interesting. One of the ones that we're going to talk about here to start with, it's a very interesting story. And this has to do with the city of New Orleans. And New Orleans is asking the need for transformational change. The new mayor, Mitch Landrieu, announced on Wednesday that he was inviting the United States Justice Department to help restructure the troubled New Orleans Police Department. Now, can you believe that? He says, can you imagine being a cop working the streets there? He says, we have a systemic failure, said Mr. Landrieu, who's been in office for less than 3 days. Speaking at a news conference, he said that the state and city governments would be involved in a sweeping reform of the police department. I've never heard of this, ladies and gentlemen. I've never really heard of this in police history. Maybe it was before the turn of the 20th century. But that was not going to get done without the help and the intervention and partnership of the United States Department of Justice. Now, I can tell you from knowing police chiefs all over the country and police administrators and some state department heads and law enforcement that about the last thing they want is the federal government to come in and begin to tell them what to do, and perhaps even under court order. It said, for a city to invite federal intervention in its police department is rare, and it's a testament to just how discontented New Orleans, have become with a police force that's been seen as corrupt for years, abusive, and ineffective. Now, I've known one police chief from New Orleans. He stayed 2 years. He came from Big Jim Parsons, had a PhD, as a matter of fact, and has a chapter in our book on police internal affairs and a section. And nearly four dozen community activists, some of who stood next to the mayor, they're urging federal oversight of their police department. Now, I simply have not... I don't get it. But anyway, the Justice Department is now expected to conduct a top-down investigation of the police force. This would lead to some kind of, you know, legally binding agreement, I suppose, for structuring. The mayor thinks he hopes that Washington and the city could enter into a consent decree. In other words, they would be holding themselves liable according to their own volition. They want a federal monitor over their police department. Almost unheard of. I mean, it has to be unheard of. I've never heard of it in my time in the criminal justice field. People are saying, well, we're going to see if we can done. You know, they're not. If we can do it. The federal government isn't saying we're going to do it for sure. But what do you bet? I'll bet that the federal government is going to get involved. And Mr. Landrieu, he says he's inherited a police force that's been described in many ways as one of the worst departments in the country. And I did know that the gentleman I mentioned, that he stayed 2 years, and that's about all he could take. And it's not, you know, one time they had the joke about the Chicago Police Department where they said it was so corrupt that they'd even taught their police dogs to sit up and beg for their act. Anyway, federal officials would have many issues to address, and I just can't imagine this kind of thing that's going on. Well, here's a nice news story that has to do with firearms. You know, we trace those issues around the country and around the world, and have a book on the subject called With Liberty and Guns for All. And what's happened is that Colorado State University had restricted, in two locations, the Colorado State University system had restricted the carrying of firearms in two different locations, two different campuses. And what's happened, guns will continue to be a legal right on Cal State system's two campuses. The CSU Board of Governors voted Wednesday to rescind the gun ban, citing a Colorado Court of Appeals ruling last month that overturned a similar ban at the University of Colorado. So what's happened there is that they found out that, you know, they're doing something. The law says that no local entity, government, city, county, whatever, can make a law that countermands or is against the state law on concealed carry. And that refers to universities, too. So Colorado and Utah are the two states in the United States that permit carrying concealed firearms on campus. And I will point out that I don't think there's been any bloodbaths in Utah. I haven't heard of any shootings on campuses. But it says here that gun rights advocates say gun-free campuses make students vulnerable to attack. Currently, 26 states ban concealed weapons on any school property, and 22 states allow individual campuses to make their decision. But I think most of the universities have decided not to permit carrying concealed firearms. You know, my pitch on the whole thing, which you've heard if you've listened to the radio show before, is that guns are everywhere. Why shouldn't law-abiding citizens have them? Will there be accidents, one in a zillion? Probably so, but we'll have to see how this works out in Colorado. Well, this next story, you know, I track the surveillance camera business too, and this story is really good. New York officials now say, after you've heard so much about this bombing case that fortunately failed in New York City, but now they're saying this is another reason why, and you know, there's some crazy things about that case. Like one of the things was the FBI lost track of the guy. They went to Connecticut to get him, and they had him under surveillance, and somehow they lost him. And I bet that wasn't five or six FBI agents either. But, you know, things happen, so I don't know the whole story. I don't know any of the story there, so something must have happened that was complicated. But anyway, New York officials now are saying that they could stop the attacks, like the attempted Times Square bombing, by expanding their controversial surveillance system, making it so sensitive that it will pick up even suspicious behavior. London already has this. They're years ahead. I've chaired a panel on this, a national panel on surveillance, and you know, this is part of the larger field called vision science, and you have all kinds of experts working on this. New York's already a heavily policed city. It has 35,000 police officers. By the way, that matches what a New York City cop makes. Can you believe that? I heard that on television the other day, but I do know, I looked about a year ago, when you start the police academy in New York City, you start at $25,000 a year. Can you believe that? I mean, and I heard a cop say that you can't afford to live in the city. Like, you can't live there. It's too expensive. I mean, that is absolutely incredible. Other people are starting academies at $65,000 a year. That's just, anyway. But they're saying that the failed terrorist bomb in Times Square has provided the authorities with a new argument for expanding a sometimes controversial security blanket of cameras, sensors, and analytical software. He says this will greatly enhance, Mayor Bloomberg, this will enhance our ability and the ability of the police to detect suspicious activity in real time and disrupt possible attacks. Bloomberg, I always. And you know, Mayor Bloomberg is in a race. He believes, along with Mayor Daley in the Mayor of London, that there is a, in Paris, that there is a surveillance camera gap that needs to be closed. And the high-tech system modeled on the Ring of Steel in London's financial district is already in place in Lower Manhattan, where Wall Street and World Trade Center reconstruction are located. Headquartered at 55 Broadway, the Lower Manhattan Security Initiative goes far beyond this traditional hodgepodge of police cameras, such as the 82 devices that are around Times Square.
Instead, an integrated system maintains an unblinking eye, not just watching, but constantly collecting license plate numbers and the video of pedestrians and drivers, as well as detecting explosives and other weapons. An important component of this program, they say, is the connection now to private networks. In other words, the private security cameras are also going to be plugged in, as some of them are in Chicago already. So they'll be able to watch, okay, how do you keep, software, but how do you keep track of all these things? I mean, who's watching all this? Anyway, this is going to be called Operation Sentinel. It plans to log every vehicle entering Manhattan Island by scanning their license plate and checking the car for radiation. Oh, my. Bloomberg announced plans to expand the lower Manhattan system, including the Times Square area. Chief Ray Kelly, you're going to hear from him tonight, he reiterated the plan. And he used the occasion to press for more federal funding from Washington. Whoops, more federal funding from Washington. Mike, what does that mean? That's code for more of your and my money going to buy surveillance cameras on Homeland Security funds for the city of New York, and they don't come cheap. The mayor himself, Mayor Bloomberg, he has budgeted more than $110 million in this economy, can you imagine, for Lower Manhattan Security Initiative, and he's going to incorporate it with the Midtown Security Initiative. So, you know, I won't go on. They're going to say more and more about this, but it is just incredible to me. The ACLU doesn't like it, New York branch. They're saying this is an attempt to extract more information about Manhattan and its people, and, it's overkill. So we'll have to see what happens. New York may be the place to go to get your picture taken 500 or 600 times an hour. If you're going there and get your car checked for its temperature, you get your car's temperature checked. That's good. And anyway, we'll have to see what happens in that particular setting. I understand the purpose and all that business, but I'm not sure exactly that's what we should be doing. This is a good one right here, if I can find the story. Oh, yeah, this is a story that says that Congress is making too many vague laws. Remember the book, 300 Felonies a Day? A conservative think tank and criminal defense lawyers are forming an unusual alliance to get Congress to quit writing criminal laws so loosely that they subject innocent people to unjust prosecution and prison. Now, I didn't say Martha Stewart, but I think her case was not quite this. But they're saying that in the last several years that the Congress has passed laws that you can convict anybody of the offense, whether they did something or not. But isn't that incredible? And one of the reasons is they say, well, these people don't know what they're talking about when they're forming these laws. Well, why make them if you don't understand entirely what you're doing? So I think that's a little odd that something like that is actually going on. Well, ladies and gentlemen, what we're going to do tonight is have some fun. We're going to take a little technology switching around here. And like I said, we got more browsers open than it's probably legal. But Bing.com, that's Microsoft's search engine mechanism, has done something here in the last week that actually is just incredible. And what Bing has done is they've allowed you to search in categories, but they've done something with videos that is just incredible. If you go to Bing.com, some of you are on a computer, you could probably do it now. If you go to Bing.com and click on videos over in the left column under Explore, and click on videos, what you're going to find is that if you type in that search box after the videos part open, if you type in that search box, for example, police, you're going to get a little series, rows and rows of little TV screens of police news and films and videos, and some of them are as recent as 13 minutes ago or 1 hour ago. In other words, you can actually see video news from the Fox and from all kinds of MSNBC, the Charlie Rose Show. I mean, on and on and on. You can get little segments of things, and you can see them all, and you don't have to open it to see if you like it all you have to do is hold your mouse over the screen, the little picture. It's like 1 inch by a half inch, and it starts playing. It will play without even opening it. You just hold your mouse cursor over the particular item that you're interested in. So you can look at a whole bunch of them. You can listen to them that way. If it's a long video, it doesn't play the whole thing, but you'll know by the time you listen to a minute or two whether you want to hear the whole thing or not. So what we've done tonight is sort of isolate some that relate to criminal justice type of issues. And one of the things I think we're going to look at, we're going to take a look at, since we're talking about the bombing, we're going to look at John Stewart's little show. He's got like 5 minutes and 58 seconds about the bombing attempt in New York City. And I think you'll find this humorous. And after that, we're going to go to the Charlie Rose show, all found on Bing, just in seconds. It finds these videos. Now, you say, okay, I can go to YouTube and I can find videos, but you can't organize them like this, and you have to open them. Here you just put the mouse cursor over the screen, the little screen, and it starts to play. But let's go ahead and see if we can listen to John Stewart. I don't watch the John Stewart show, but this seemed to be particularly related and funny relative to the bombing attempt in New York City. So let's see if this will work. We may have some commercials here and there, so hold on for that.
Remember that car in Times Square, the one they filled with explosives? Because some kind of fatwa that had been issued against the Bubblegum Shrimp Company based on their new Karanacopia Shrimp Fidel Sampler. It's a wide array of shrimp-based dishes that for some reason uses Islamic fun. I don't know why they did it. Somebody there must think it's halalia. Days ago, we had no idea what happened or who did it. Not anymore!
Police make an arrest in that failed bombing on Times Square, taking a Pakistani-born U.S. citizen into custody just before he took off for Dubai.
Now, 53 hours and 20 minutes later, in the words of the police commissioner, Ray Kelly of New York, an arrest has been made.
53 hours, 20 minutes. Some good old-fashioned,
honest-to-goodness American police work. Talking hunches, fingerprints, guys and bands wearing earphones doing this. Grizzled law enforcement officials, fades from retirement, coming back for one last flight at the Apple. Nothing against your night vision goggles and your unmanned predator drones, but we went from, is that Pathfinder double parked, to, you have the right to remain silent, in less time than it takes Sting to climax. Boom!
I apologize for that.
A little lesson for the kids at home. Remember, chicks dig the electric loop. By the way, 54 hours, 55 hours, it would have been too late. They got this guy at the airport as he was about to fly to Dubai. Here's how it went down. The alleged bomber boarded the flight, started relaxing, thinks he's home free. But the authorities are hot on his tail, charging through JFK, screaming, stop the plane! Stop the plane! But it's too late! Oh my God, it's too late! The plane is pulling away full of terrorists celebrating their victory. Little do they know, the plane is leaking gas, and one man has no intention of letting them get away. Victory is ours! Anyway, that's how it happened. I think that's how it happened. Anyway. The suspect is Pakistani-born American citizen Faisal Shahzad, which freaked me out because my doctor had just put me on Faisal for my exam. shot, he said. They rub two shazads of Faisal a day on the affected area. It should clear up in a week or two. Now, if you don't mind, I'm going to check your prostate. But you're a dermatologist. All right. So Faisal's in custody. They read him his Miranda rights. Although not everyone thought that reading him his Miranda rights is a good idea.
Don't give this guy his Miranda rights.
One of them already given him his Miranda rights.
Well, I think obviously that would be a serious mistake.
I didn't want to do this, Senator, because I do still have a little love for you, but this next clip's going to hurt me as much as it's going to hurt you, Chuck. Won't take someone being far more reasonable about reading the suspect is my address.
He has all of the rights under the Constitution.
Right. If he knows information that could wipe out some of your friends and family, you don't want that?
Again, it's not a popular answer. We don't say that we shred the Constitution.
Right. I'm getting too old for this. Of course, we're grateful for the quick arrest, not only for everyone's safety, but also it nipped in the bud what was becoming an ugly case of racial profiling.
The possible suspect, described as a white male, appearing to be in his mid-40s.
Earlier tape shows a man, a white male in his 40s, they want to question.
The guy in the video seen here is described as a white male in his 40s. He's seen stopping to take off a sweatshirt. Oh, we have footage of a middle-aged white guy in Times Square. It must be the bomber. Oh, he's taking off his shirt. Well, he's not the bomber. He's probably got hooker blood on him. I mean, he's a middle-aged white guy. Here we go again. The white guy did it. Same old story, whether it's financial malfeasance or catastrophic oil leak or financial malfeasance. Pin the tail on the hump. Well, I've had it. Don't get me wrong. The white community is used to it. Cops treat us differently. It's gotten so bad, drunk white guys can't even run across the baseball field in the middle of a professional game without being tased by the man. That's clearly racial profiling. As much as I think attendance would rise 30-40% if all Major League ballparks would replace their seventh inning stretch festivities with that. Racial profiling. Let's see it again. Uncage the boy. Wait. Now! Tase him now! Hail Caesar! My point is this. Next time you hear about a bank deal gone awry or witness asinine stadium thunder, see a white guy coming out of Home Depot loading huge tanks of propane and fertilizer into his SUV. Don't ask for our papers. It's not a makeup to be white.
Okay, I don't watch John Stewart, but that clip was funny about the New York incident. This next one we're going to, again, found on Bing.com, one of the strips, the squares, and page after page after page of little screens of news stories. Some of them would go back 2 or 3 years. Some of them will be full-length movies, like off of Hulu. But the convenience of Bing is the way they're displayed and how you can entertain all these. And pick the things that you want and build kind of like your own show and put them into bookmarks, which is what I've done tonight. We're going to listen to the Charlie Rose show and about 20 minutes of Police Commissioner Kelly talking about the incident in New York City.
The following program is brought to you with limited commercial interruption by Allstate. Sure, Paul. People who switch from Geico to Allstate save $373.
Paul.
It is Paul. They actually save more. An average of $473 a year. Now that's the right answer.
I'm
Square bombing investigation widened today. Pakistani authorities have arrested several people in Karachi in connection with the case. Here in New York, the suspect, Faisal Shahzad, has told investigators that he received bomb-making training in the tribal region of Waziristan. He's also said that he acted alone. Late last night, federal authorities arrested Shahzad, a Pakistani-born U.S. citizen, at John F. Kennedy Airport. He was on a Dubai-bound flight that was called back from the runway. His name had been put on the no-fly list just hours before he boarded. In a press conference earlier today, Attorney General Eric Holder said Shahzad would be charged with terrorism and attempted use of a weapon of mass destruction. Based on what we know so far, it is clear that this was a terrorist plot aimed at murdering Americans in one of the busiest places in our country. We believe that this suspected terrorist fashioned a bomb from rudimentary ingredients, placed it in a rusty SUV, and drove it into Times Square with the intent to kill as many innocent tourists and theatergoers as possible. Now, make no mistake, although this car bomb failed to properly detonate, this plot was a very serious attempt. If successful, it could have resulted in a lethal terrorist attack, causing death and destruction in the heart of New York City.
Shahzad was arraigned in federal court in New York early this afternoon. Joining me now is New York City Police Commissioner Ray Kelly. I'm pleased to have him back on this program. Welcome. When did you first hear that there was problems with a van in Times Square?
About 7 o'clock on Saturday evening. The initial event started about 6:34 evening when vendors on the corner saw smoke coming out of a vehicle. The Nissan Pathfinder notified a mounted police officer on horseback. He saw the vehicle smoking, called the fire department on his radio, called for the fire department, and he and other police officers in the area, a significant number of officers in Times Square, moved people away from the vehicle. Now, I heard about that about 7 o'clock. I was at the White House Correspondents' Dinner with the mayor in Washington. And, you know, these things come in a piecemeal fashion. It was a report of a suspicious package in a vehicle. It's not a particularly unusual call. Even a vehicle on fire is not an unusual call. So what happened then, the bomb squad responds. They get there sometime after 7 o'clock. They see the package. They make a determination that they have to suit up. They hook up a pull line to the back of the vehicle, open the door, and then systematically start to get the device or the elements of the device out of the vehicle. That took, easy for me to say, but it took a significant period of time.
Is it surprising that a vehicle like that could get to Times Square with that kind of material?
Not really. We're an open city. We're an open society. We have a lot of traffic that goes through Times Square. We certainly have a lot of people. Our tourist numbers are very significant. You know, people drive there. Taxi cabs are there. You know, so many vehicles go through Times Square. The crossroads of the world, as we say.
What's interesting, then, is the next step. How you and how police work determined who had left the vehicle there. Give us a sense of that.
Well, as I say, the bomb squad had to get the material out, and that was no easy task. They used a water disruptor on part of that. That's a high-powered water cannon. They then were able to tow the vehicle to a forensic lab that we have in Queens while the bomb material was taken to the range up in the Bronx and Rodman's Neck. In the examination of the vehicle, they look for what they call the hidden VIN number. The dashboard VIN number had been removed. So you crawl under the engine block, you find it. That's what our detectives did. Now, as a result of that VIN number, it identified the registered owner, a man in Connecticut. He is contacted. It turns out that he had turned the vehicle over to a woman. The woman sells the vehicle, puts it in Craigslist, and has a buyer who calls. Now, she sells this vehicle to an individual who uses a particular cell phone and the cell phone number which she had. Now, in going through the databases, investigators determined that this cell phone had made calls or received calls from a telephone number in Pakistan. Now, the suspect had used that telephone number in Pakistan as a number in an application that he was using to travel outside of the country. So they were able, based on the phone call, the phone number that the initial phone called, to link it up to the suspect in the application that he had made. So after that, then the investigators went to Connecticut, tried to locate him, did locate him, had him under surveillance, and he then was able to go to Kennedy Airport. He bought a one-way a ticket when he was en route driving to the airport. He gets it on, makes a reservation on Air Emirati, pays cash for the ticket, and he gets on the plane. Again, he's an American citizen and has a passport.
So far, there are a couple of questions. One, is this primarily New York NYPD investigation so far, or is this in cooperation with the FBI?
Absolutely.
Everybody involved in
this? Well, the FBI and the NYPD investigators, we really are a seamless team in this city, and we have almost 130 investigators now working in the Joint Terrorist Task Force. New York City police investigators work with FBI agents. So when I say investigators, I'm talking about both agencies, primarily.
Once you had someone under observation, a suspect, why don't you arrest him immediately?
Because you need probable cause to make an arrest. And at that time, there was not enough to make the arrest when they initially started the surveillance. Now, there was discussion, and in fact, I think there was the production of a material witness warrant, which would have been able to take him into custody for something less than probable cause.
So, but he's also part of the reason you're looking to see whether he contacts anyone else and see who might know about it, what he's going on, what he's doing.
Well, I think while he's under surveillance, what you're trying to do is build up a case or build up enough information to get probable cause to make an arrest. There's lots of other avenues. They're exploiting the telephone, seeing who else was contacted by the phone, doing a more of a history on the vehicle, other vehicles that were registered to this individual. He had left keys in the car.
And weapons.
Well, he had purchased a weapon in March, a Tech 9, sort of a semi-automatic handgun that has a rifle stock on it and a rifle barrel that you can attach to it. So it's, in essence, a handgun that you can make into a rifle.
And this was found in a vehicle that he left at the airport?
This was ultimately found in the vehicle, but the investigators didn't know that, didn't know if he was in the house with this weapon, knew he had purchased it. It was found in a vehicle. This is in the charging documents in the paper.
Right.
And it was found with several magazines of ammunition in the vehicle, behind the seat, behind the driver's seat, in a computer case.
And why would they let him board the plane?
Why did they let him board the plane? I don't know. I don't know all the answers. Customs and Border Protection, of course.
Because he was on a list.
Well, I think, again, I don't know all the details of how they produce a list, but I think there was an issue as to when that list is ultimately published and when it gets to the airline. This individual was only put on the list yesterday.
Right.
You know, as his investigation went full.
Hours before he was arrested.
Hours before he was arrested.
But, I mean, here, what's interesting, I'm asking out of curiosity, he was allowed to get on a plane. He was under surveillance, allowed to get on a plane, allowed the plane to leave a terminal and get on the runway.
Well, there was a period of time. Call it back in. There was a period of time when he wasn't under surveillance. I mean, I think that's
not at that point. I mean, he had to be under surveillance, didn't he?
No, I don't believe he was under surveillance.
He got on the plane.
So he gets on a plane, and this is what happens when you are involved in these investigations. You know, it's not that easy to surveil someone up close for a significant period of time. So looks like somehow he was able to elude that surveillance and make it to the airport.
He got to the airport and got on the plane. And then the Customs and Border Protection people realized that they had a match with the no-fly zone. And
no fly list.
Yeah, and he also had to show his passport, I guess, and everybody else to get on the plane.
Well, or not something. A ticket as well.
Right, yeah. Right.
So what happens is you have to build a manifest, and I think that that's one of the things that Customs checks, but it takes time, and they try to do that as close to when the plane is taking off as possible, because people get off the plane, things change, so they want to wait for as close to the departure time as possible.
Should a conclusion be made here that we all fear and wonder why there have not been huge sort of car bombs, and we assume part of it is because of superior police work at the local, state, and federal level. On the other hand, this person seems to be rather incompetent at putting together the right materials. Suppose he'd been more competent, would he have been successful?
Well, I think that's an interesting point, because we have made it very difficult in this country to get those materials. It's difficult to get legitimate explosives. It's virtually impossible if you're in the business of doing demolitions, that sort of thing. It's a heavily licensed area. So that's where you see Najib Al-Azazi going out and buying hairspray and cooking it in a hotel. So this individual seems to put together a system that worked, but he didn't have the peers, right, access to the a proper material, so he tried to substitute. He went and he bought fireworks, M88 fireworks, in significant quantities in Pennsylvania, and brought them back to substitute for an explosive. I would be cautious in characterizing it as being amateurish.
Okay,
he tried to do what he wanted to do with the materials that he had available to him.
More likely to say that he knew how to do it. He learned how to do it, perhaps in Waziristan,
right?
Which is
he's admitted, and it's in the charging document in the complaint, that he went to terrorist training in Waziristan.
And is he cooperating? And so what do we know about him? What do we know about his family? What do we know about what happened to him
when he's come out? And, eventually, maybe he's in custody less than 24 hours. But he's a 30-year-old naturalized U.S. citizen, naturalized in 2009. He has a wife and two children in Peshawar, Pakistan. He once worked for...
They're still in Pakistan.
Yes. He once worked for Elizabeth Art, and he's living by himself. He lives on the second floor of a tree family house. As I say, more details will be coming out as we talk to him.
Why did he want to do this?
I think the general feeling of his religion being under attack, words to that effect.
He felt like his religion was under attack by America or Americans.
That's sort of the general term. This is what he's saying. I think, perhaps as his questioning goes on, he will get, more specificity.
Do we think that somehow when he went back to Pakistan and where he got the training that he was even more heavily influenced? I mean, how come this guy ends up doing this thing?
That's an excellent question, and we'd like to know that. But I think it's too early to make the sorts of determinations. So we're encouraged by the fact that he is cooperative. We'll take that information, and investigators, certainly on the federal level, will
take the Pakistani government talk to him.
I'm sorry?
Has the Pakistani government talked to him?
No. He's a U.S. citizen.
I understand that.
Yeah,
but he has a Pakistani connection. They may know. Is his family coming to see him? Do we know anything about?
Well, not so far.
Right. So what are the lessons of this, which is the important thing? I mean, first of all, there's a lesson of cooperation among law enforcement at every level.
Yeah.
A second is sort of how recordings, you can develop a trail.
Absolutely. I think those two lessons are good ones. And the use of technology, of course, is so important, so central to investigating and stopping the terrorism. And you mentioned cooperation. Cooperation is the best I've seen among federal agencies. Another lesson for us is that New York remains in the crosshairs. We've had 11 plots against this city since September 11, 2001. And if you ask most people, even New York residents, how many events or plots do you think happened in New York City since September 11th, people will think that number is way too high. But it isn't. So it means to us in law enforcement that they will continue to try to come here. We're doing everything we reasonably can do, but we have an open society, an open city, and it's challenging to protect it.
Some say inevitably they will be successful.
Well, we certainly hope it's not here. We're doing more than any city in the world, as far as I know, to protect New York. Now, you go to other places, and we certainly would like to see as much protection given to the rest of the country. But I think this underscores the fact that New York is seen as America in the eyes of terrorists. Communication capital, financial capital. We've been attacked here successfully.
Media capital, everything else.
Twice in 1993 and, of course, the horrific events of 2001. So, we believe, and the intelligence community believes, that this is the number one target in the United States. So we see Najib Boulazizi recently. We see this individual. There's a focus on New York City. No other city is experiencing anything like this in this country.
Was he part of a larger organization?
We don't know.
But he had his function.
Well, does that make him part of an organization?
I don't know.
Sure. So we don't know.
Yeah.
We don't know. And that's
what he say he was?
This process is ongoing. He's being cooperative.
But he hasn't said he's acting alone or with someone.
He was acting alone.
He does.
Yeah.
You believe
it? We'll see. I mean, he states that he made this bomb by himself in the garage of the rental unit that he was in. So we will,
We'll see. You normally, when something like this happens, and clearly this happened in New York, but there's a link to Pakistan, my guess is you've got policemen on the way to Karachi right now.
Well,
to talk to the people there, or because it's a federal investigation, not so.
Right. Well, that's true. But again, we have New York City police officers embedded in the Joint Terrorist Task Force, so maybe. But they're acting in a federal capacity. But I'm sure investigators will certainly try to, as best they can, reconstruct what happened with this individual.
Any tool you need you don't have?
Hey, we always like to have more police officers. We'd like to have more technology. We'd like to have more cameras in Midtown Manhattan. You have 500,000 cameras in London. We have the Lower Manhattan Security Initiative, which is Canal Street South in Manhattan. We will have about 3,000 cameras, public and private sector cameras, and that program is underway. Our goal is to move that program, migrate it north to Midtown Manhattan, 30th Street to 60th Street, and have several thousand cameras in that program. So we think it's a very valuable tool. It's a crime preventer. It certainly can help.
We also, I'm under the impression that there was an ability to have somehow a composite of him drawn, which was shown to the woman who sold him the car.
Yes.
And she said, it's more likely to this. One more example of the kind of police work that takes place.
It was a direct police sketch. The woman had an excellent memory, and the sketch looks very much like it. So, yes, the artist, FBI artist, did a great job. And the woman communicated, of course, because that's the key. So, yes, it was a very good sketch, about the best sketch that I've Well, hopefully we'll continue to get information, and that information will be exploited, perhaps telephone information. As you said, contact. Is he part of a larger group? You don't know at this juncture. They've arrested some people in Pakistan. Apparently they have, yes. I don't know the specifics of that.
I know it's difficult because there's so many things are not known, and it's an ongoing investigation,
right.
And you've got a person who's you're trying to have a conversation with him so you can maximize the benefit of what he tells you.
It's true.
But thank you for coming.
Thank you, Charlie. Always good to be with
thank you.
Ray Kelly.
Police Committee.
Well, Charlie Rose, I think, is one of the best interviewers in the media business. He has a real talent for asking really good questions and then keeping his mouth shut and letting his interviewee speak. I think I have time to play this other one. It's kind of an interesting one. It's kind of a funny story in a way, but if you heard the one about the woman, they call her the granny. She's in her 70s, and she slapped her granddaughter, and that she was arrested and spent time in jail for doing that. Let's see if we can find that real quick.
You can get a lot of water when you expect flight.
While they're talking about this, do you hear them mention that London has 500,000 cameras, 500,000 cameras in the city of London, and New York once more, Paris once more, Chicago certainly once more, the surveillance camera gap.
Down in Florida, there is a 73-year-old grandmother who is now under arrest for domestic battery. Why? Because her granddaughter mouthed off, repeatedly throwing the F-bomb at her, and she slapped the granddaughter across the face. Got arrested. Listen to Granny. Listen to what she said.
And then she kept repeating the F word to me about the whole family, et cetera, et cetera. She just went on and on, and I just got so upset. I got up and slapped her across the face.
David, is this a case of police overreaching? Granny, 73, domestic battery?
Megan, I'll tell you why, because I think this is a case of domestic violence laws overreaching. I mean, if this had happened 4 or 5 years ago, the young lady probably would not have ever said that to the nun, in my opinion. But, you know, prosecutors have a
school. She got kicked out of Catholic school because she said an F-bomb to a nun, and then she said it all to the granny, which resulted in the slap.
And what can prosecutors do? Well, while domestic violence laws require that they prosecute these cases, they can also dismiss what's called in the interest of justice. And when this 18-year-old does not want to prosecute grandmother, absolutely that's what should happen.
Yeah, an 18-year-old has now come out and said, please don't prosecute granny. And yet, nonetheless, she was under arrest and was in the jail for 24 hours wearing the jail garb and the cuffs and everything, Lee.
Yeah, terrible. Doesn't she look a little bit like, who's dancing with this? A Cloris Leachman? Is that the name? Tiny bit. And that makes
Dancing with a star?
That makes, I don't know.
Well, there's a little more to that story, but that's incredible, isn't it? So, one of the things we're passing on tonight, if you haven't discovered it at all, and some have, and probably some haven't, is that Bing, if you want to do videos, go to Bing, go to the left column, hit videos, type in the search box what you're looking for, and you'll find things as recent as a few minutes ago, going back years, from small segments of 1 minute or less to full-length movies. But the trick is the way they're organized and your ability to preview them by just putting your mouse cursor over the top of the little screens. And take a look at that and see what you think. Well, thank you very much for joining us tonight. And what we're going to do is have Audrey sign us out and let Vera Lynn say goodnight. We'll meet again. Hope to see you next week.
Don't know where, but I know we'll meet again. just like you always do, till the blue skies rise the dark clouds far away. So will you please say hello to the folks that I know, tell them I won't be long. They'll be happy to know that as you saw me go,